In the autumn of 1665, death arrived in a tailor's bundle. The quiet Derbyshire mining village of Iam would soon face an unimaginable choice that would echo through centuries. For young widow Anna Frith, struggling to raise two small boys after her husband's death in the mines, life had finally begun to improve. Her lodger, George Vickers, a journeyman tailor, brought both income and unexpected warmth to her cottage, forming a bond with her son Jamie and awakening feelings Anna thought long buried. Then came the fever. George's face blotched with rose-like rings, a massive yellow-purple lump on his neck. Despite his pleas for her to leave lest she catch his foul contagion, Anna stayed by his side. His dying words, "Burn it all," would haunt her when she realized the plague had arrived in cloth from London. Within weeks, the disease claimed Anna's baby Tom, who leaked blood in his final hours, and threatened her remaining son Jamie as a painful swelling developed in his armpit. What makes this story so haunting is how familiar it now feels. The initial denial, the desperate search for explanations, the painful isolation, these echo our modern pandemic experiences. Yet the villagers of Iam faced these trials without modern medicine or communication, armed only with their courage and community bonds. As death moved through their homes with terrifying randomness, they would soon make a decision that would define them for all time. Standing in his half-empty church, Reverend Michael Mompelian proposed something unprecedented: a voluntary quarantine of the entire village to prevent spreading the disease to neighboring communities. "We are, in effect, a parish of the dead," he declared, "but we have been given a chance to save others from our fate." The rector's words fell on a congregation transformed by grief. For many, the decision meant certain death, yet infecting unsuspecting villages seemed unthinkable. All villagers pledged to remain except the wealthy Bradford family, who fled to Oxfordshire. The village erected boundary stones where outsiders would leave provisions and collect payment placed in vinegar-filled holes to kill contagion. This extraordinary communal sacrifice saved countless lives beyond Iam's borders, though at a terrible cost. Profound heroism lying not in dramatic rescues, but in quiet, collective sacrifice. As plague ravaged the village, fear turned toward Mem Gowdy and her niece Aines, who lived on the outskirts. Despite their valuable herbal knowledge, their independence made them targets. Aines drew suspicion for her unconventional lifestyle, living freely, choosing her lovers, and speaking her mind. When traditional remedies failed against the plague, villagers whispered that the Gowdies served dark powers. A mob dragged Aines to the village green, accusing her of witchcraft. When Anna begged her to recant, Aines gave a ghostly smile before falsely confessing, laughing wildly until they hanged her. Michael Mompelian arrived too late. When villagers defended their actions citing Aines' confession, he thundered that the devil resided not in Aines, but in their own ugly thoughts and evil doubting. Throughout history, communities under threat seek scapegoats: Jews during the Black Death, Asian Americans during COVID-19. The Gowdies show how knowledge and independence become threatening during crises, when conformity feels safer than critical thinking. The plague year stripped away social conventions, revealing people's true natures. As death became commonplace, villagers responded according to their deepest character, some rising to heroism, while others succumbed to baser instincts. Anna Frith transformed from housemaid to community healer. After losing her children, she channeled grief into service, mastering herbal medicine and delivering Mary Daniel's breech baby using techniques from the murdered Gowdy women. Others chose different paths. Jane Martin abandoned strictness for drink. Andrew Merrick retreated to solitude, while John Gordon turned to religious self-flagellation. The plague exposed humanity's darkest aspects, too. Anna's father turned grave digging into extortion. When Christopher Unwin began recovering, another villager attempted to murder him and buried him alive to steal his possessions. Modern crises reveal similar patterns. healthcare workers risking lives during COVID-19 alongside those hoarding resources or spreading misinformation. Crisis doesn't create character, it reveals it. As plague ravaged Aeom, survivors questioned whether divine punishment or natural causes were behind their suffering. Anna's perspective evolved between religious faith and scientific inquiry. Initially accepting Mompelian's view of the plague as God's test, Anna's thinking shifted while working with Eleanor on herbal remedies. "I wondered why we insisted on seeing the plague as either God's test or the devil's work," she reflected, "rather than simply a thing in nature, like a stone that trips us." With Eleanor, she tracked the plague's patterns across different age groups. Meanwhile, superstition flourished. Aphra posed as Annie Scouty's ghost to sell fraudulent charms, while others sought protection through folk rituals. This tension between faith and reason persists today. During COVID-19, some saw divine punishment or conspiracy, while scientists worked to understand transmission. Anna's journey shows that questioning received wisdom leads to deeper understanding. Her hope, perhaps, combined with practical knowledge, offers a middle path between faith and reason. In a society where women held little formal power, the plague revealed their extraordinary resilience. While men dominated public decisions, women like Anna, Eleanor, and the Gowdies provided essential knowledge and care that sustained the community. Though physically fragile, Eleanor's sinewy mind and driving energy transformed Anna's life through literacy and by mapping the plague spread. The Gowdy women embodied ancient healing wisdom that survived despite persecution. Even in tragedy, women maintained practical functions. Mary Hadfield assisted with hog butchering, mothers cared for children despite grief, and women surrendered treasured possessions during the great burning of contaminated items. The plague pushed women beyond traditional boundaries, with Anna entering the male domain of the lead mine to help Mary Wickford claim her inheritance. Women's strength has often been invisible in official records, yet essential to survival. Not in dramatic heroics, but in the quiet, persistent work of maintaining life amidst devastation. When the plague subsided, Anna emerged transformed. After helping deliver Mrs. Bradford's illegitimate baby and preventing Elizabeth from drowning it, Anna took the child, receiving emerald jewelry from Mrs. Bradford for the infant's future. Michael warned that Elizabeth would want Anna dead as a witness and offered his horse for escape. Anna accepted his help but chose her own path to the Mediterranean. Years later, Anna lives in Oran, North Africa, practicing medicine under Ahmed Bey's tutelage, helping women who would otherwise die. Though her faith remains tattered, she has found purpose in Arabic medical texts. Known as Jamie, she renamed the Bradford baby Aisha, child. The child plays with little Eleanor, named for her father's eyes, suggesting Anna has found both purpose and love. This ending embodies the novel's theme, catastrophe breaking convention's chains. Anna's journey from servant to independent healer represents triumph amid limited women's options. Like the walnut sapling villagers preserved because they were too full of endings to remove this fragile beginning, the plague's legacy wasn't just death, but rebirth.